Okay, so it should be recording now. Do you see that it's recording?
Yes.
Yes, okay. So it's when you start up Blender, make sure you do it from a terminal window or command line so that any error messages from your Python scripting are easily found and accessible. And we're going to do a little bit more Python scripting from the Python console in Blender, which you get to by going to the scripting screen layout. And when you start up Blender, unless you've modified your startup settings, you'll get a camera, a cube, and a lamp. Let's see. And I'm rearranging my screen a little bit so that I can see you guys while I teach you. Okay. So last time I showed you how to, you know, select and unselect the cube and access various menu functions from the Python console. And today we'll do a little bit more of that. And then I'll show you how to, you know, create some objects and give them a 3D coordinate on the screen here. And then we'll start adding some metadata to our objects. I'll show you how to extend the data stored on an object to go beyond what Blender puts there. I think last time I showed you how you can select and deselect vertices and polygons in the object. And I showed you that an object in Blender is a container for the geometric data associated with the object. In the case of a camera, it's all the metadata needed to make a camera in Blender. And then the lamp also has metadata to make it into a lamp of various types. And the cube is an object, and its metadata is the mesh of the object. And I showed you how to access the mesh data of the object. So just to recap that very quickly, this is an object called cube, but if I want to see all the objects in my scene, the scene is a one of the components of, or you know, one of the items stored in BPY data. So if I do BPY.data, you can see that it's a Blender Python structure called blend data. And it's probably acts like a dictionary, maybe. So I can say bpy.data.keys. No, I can't do that. But I can do a dir on bpy.data to see what is in there. So dir, I think last time I showed you, in case you're not up on all the cool things that Python lets you do, dir is a command in Python that lets you introspect an item in your Python interface. So I have something called bpy.data, and if I do dir on it, I can see it has these things. And one of the things it has, just recapping quickly from last time, is it has, we have scenes. Right now, we only have one scene. We can see the scenes up here in this in the scene dropdown, browse scene. We have one scene called capital S scene. But to see to see what's in there. Scene says it's a collection. A collection, I remember I told you last time, a collection is a special Blender Python object that's kind of like a mixture of a list and a dictionary. It behaves a little bit like a list and a little bit like a dictionary. Because it behaves a little bit like a dictionary, it has keys, and I can look at this keys, and there's one key in it called scene, which is this scene, right? So I can do things like dereference that. I can get a handle or dereference the scene called scene and store a handle to it in a variable that I'm going to call SCN. So this lets me have my scene. And then I can do a dir on that thing, which is a scene. These are all the properties or attributes that a scene has. And one of the attributes that a scene has is the objects that are in here. Where is it? Object bases? Objects. Here it is. It's kind of at the end of the line. It's called objects. So if I do scene.objects.keys, because the objects is another one of these collections, you can see it has cube, lamp, and camera. Another way to get at the objects, though, is to go into the bpydata.objects. Objects.keys. And you'll see that I also have camera, cube, and lamp. Okay. Now, an important distinction to make between the scene objects and the BPY data objects is the following. So if it's possible to have many objects in the BPY data objects collection, and those objects are there kind of like the props on a stage, or you know, the props off stage behind the scenes, the props at a theater production. So you can have many objects in your BPY data objects that are kind of in your prop room, but they don't necessarily have to be out on stage, staged for the scene that's currently under production, right? So an important distinction to make is that BPY data objects will contain all the objects in your model, including objects that might not be in your scene, viewable in your scene. So if you're writing scripts that are iterating over and operating on objects, it's important to keep that distinction in mind. And generally, I would say, you know, most of the time when you're operating on objects, you're going to want to operate on objects in your scene and not necessarily all the objects in your BPY data objects list. So just keep that little subtlety in mind. So that's why it can be useful to get the scene. Now, but notice a moment ago, I grabbed the scene by getting BPY data scenes and grabbed the one scene. Normally, with most of the models you'll be making, you'll have just one scene, and unless you've changed the name of it, it'll be called scene with a capital S, okay? But it's possible to make a Blender model that has multiple scenes, and only one scene can be active at any one time. Now if, and I think I'm pretty sure that in a Blend file, when you open a Blend file, you have to have one active scene. I don't think it's possible to have a blend file that has no active scenes. Maybe Bob can comment on that if he knows the answer, or someone else here. I've never seen a blend file that didn't have one scene in it. So we'll go on the assumption that you'll have one scene and that scene has to be active. And so if we only have one scene, it's safe to grab your scene this way, right? But if you have more than one scene, how do you know which scene is the active scene? This is where you'll make use of bpy.context. And there'll be, I just did a dir on bpy context, and somewhere in here, there's an active object. And I don't see active scene listed, but there is going to be something called scene. So it's kind of funny that they have something called active object, which will give you the name of the current active object, whose name is usually listed in the lower left-hand corner of the 3D view window cube. So if I said bpy.context.activeObject, it says it's the cube. And if I said bpy, but what's funny is that they have a thing called active object, but the scene doesn't say active scene, it just says scene. So what this means is the active scene, because you can have more than one scene, like I said, and only one can be active at a time. So it's funny that this just says scene though, not active scene. So if I say scene, then I get, you know, it's BPY data scene scene. So this is actually a pointer. Well, so active object, it gives you a handle to BPY data objects cube. And scene gives me a handle to BPY data scenes scene, okay? So I could have set my SCN dereferencing variable like that. And this is the safe way to do it, because this will always give you the name of the active scene. And then if I wanted to know the objects that are in the scene, instead of going to BPY data, I would say scene dot objects. And then if I wanted to see their names, I could say scene objects keys, right? Like that. Okay. So I'm going to, delete the cube. And I think the way to do that is, let's say there was no object selected. Notice that when I unselect everything, cube still says, it still says cube is the active object. And so if I went back here and I said active object, it still says cube. So another distinction to be made is it's possible to have an active object that is not currently selected. And so this can be confusing sometimes when you're writing a script. You know, why isn't my script, you know, behaving the right way? And it could be because the operation that you're trying to perform requires that the object be selected and not just be the active object. And then other operators, I'm not sure the complete list of which operators behave one way or the other. And in fact, I'm not sure that on the Blender documentation website whether they even have such a list. I wish they did. you know, which operators require that the object be selected and which one requires that it only be active and it doesn't necessarily have to be selected. I guess, you know, by trial and error, you can kind of, you know, figure that out. So I'm going to try to delete that object with the delete operation. And that would be under object delete. It says delete selected objects. So if I look at this menu, this says delete selected objects, right? It doesn't say delete active objects. It says delete selected objects. So let's see what happens when I try to delete that without the cube being selected. And my instruction today is kind of a stream of consciousness showing kind of the thought process that you could use for yourself as you're trying to figure out how to do something in the Blender interface that maybe you haven't done before. And there's a kind of a procedure you can go through to try things out in the console here. And it's really nice to be able to do that. So let's see. If I right click on this, I can say copy Python command. And then down here, I can now paste my command. It says BPUI ops object delete use global equal false. I'm not sure what the use global option means, but if I hit this, it's probably going to say context incorrect because I don't have a selected object. And it says canceled. Okay. It doesn't say context incorrect, but it didn't actually do what I asked it to do. Okay. But if I go back here, you can see that the cube is still the active object. And I think I can say .select equal true. And I can make, this is kind of a shortcut to the cube. I know that the active object is currently the cube. And I can say select it like that. Now it's selected. And now I can, let's see, go back in here and try to delete it. And now it deleted it, right? Because it is selected, it was selected. And this operator called object delete, you know, told us when we looked at it in the menu over here, the little bubble help for it said that delete selected objects. And notice it says objects plural, so I could have more than one object selected and it would delete all the selected objects. And since that's deleted, I can now go back here and look at what the active object is. Now the active object says empty. It's not saying anything, right? So the cube had previously been the active object because I had selected it once and unselected it. But I've never selected the camera or the lamp. And so after I deleted the cube, the interface doesn't know what to make to be the active object. So it makes nothing be the active object. So you have to be, when you're writing scripts that operate on active objects or selected objects, it's really important to write your script in such a way that it sets itself up with the right conditions and it doesn't assume anything about what the user has been doing recently in the user interface. So this gets to be one of the trickiest parts of writing a script that automates things at the click of a button, because you have to set things up in such a way that it sets the state of the user interface in a known state, in the proper state for your script to be able to operate. And you have to be able to get things into the proper state. Okay. So let's add an object by scripting. I'm going to add an icosphere mesh. So let's see, if I If I right click on this, I can copy the Python command and I can paste the Python command. Okay, so I'm gonna say bpy ops mesh primitive icosphere add. And I think there are some options, like I can set the name of it in here perhaps, but if I just add one, then I get an icosphere, and objects are always added at the location of the 3D cursor. So, and the default name will be icosphere, or some name with a prefix of icosphere, and then a suffix of some number that Blender chooses so that the name is unique. So the names of objects in the namespace of objects, those names have to be unique in the Blender interface. So if I add another one, it got added at the location of the 3D cursor, which is the same place it was. So now I have two icospheres, but they're sitting on top of each other, and I can't tell that they're sitting on top of each other. Let me delete the one that I just added. And if I select that there and say X, I can delete the second one that I added. And I'll leave this in the state that it was before, where the icosphere was selected. If I left click somewhere here, then I can drop my 3D cursor there. And now when I add my icosphere, it gets added to that location. Okay. That's because all this behavior is the default behavior for adding objects to the scene, and I haven't chosen any arguments or options to the function or the operator when I'm calling it. I can't remember what all the options are for that, but I might be able to find out. So I showed you last time that the help for Blender Python commands isn't always helpful. Also, it doesn't properly page things. And here it says help on set object, right? And this isn't set object, it's add a primitive, right? So this is some generic, you know, documentation that it's spitting up here, but it's not really helpful because it's not specific to this command that I'm executing. So what we can do to find out what options are available is we can go to the Blender website. In my other terminal window here, let me go to the Blender documentation and I'll show you how to navigate and find your way around. So this is blender.org, and one of the menus across the top of their webpage is one called support, and support is where you find out, is where you find the documentation, also tutorials. And you can pay for or don't make a donation and get support from a pro. So the user manual is the manual all about the Blender user interface. But what we are doing is Python scripting. And so we're going to use the Python API reference. And then Blender for Developers, I think, is how to get involved in coding and expanding and improving the Blender itself. So we're going to go to the Blender Python API reference. And a really useful web page here is all about the operators, which is what we're doing. So how do we know we're doing an operator? The command that we just executed said bpy.ops. Anything in bpy.ops is an operator. And so under operators, they give you some tips on what context is about and everything. And then down below here are all the different kinds of operators. So the operator we have said bpyops.mesh.primitive-icosphere-add. So it's mesh. So this is a mesh operator. So if we scroll down through here, we'll find mesh operators right here. And then what you have here is an alphabetical listing of all the mesh operators. So you have to scroll down until you find the one that you're looking for. And this one's called primitive icosphere add. So that's with a P, ops mesh, PR. You can see there's tons and tons of things. You could spend hours and hours, days and days, weeks and weeks, and Bob and I have exploring all these things. So, okay, so primitive cube add, cone add, cube add, gizmo, I don't know what that is, cylinder, grid, icosphere. Okay, so this says when we make an icosphere, we can give it these options. And we could tell it what radius we want it to have, how finely subdivided the triangles of the icosphere should be, and some other options. We can give it a location directly when we create it, and we can rotate it, and we can scale it, right? So we can give it a location, rotation, and scale. As arguments when we create the object. So this gives us lots of control over adding the icosphere. So now we've seen how we can access a couple different menu items from a Python script. From the Python console. What if I wanted to write a script that generated, I don't know, say, 10 icospheres at random locations within some, some small distance away from the origin. Now that we've seen how to add an icosphere and we've seen the options for what I can do to an icosphere as I add it, like set its location, maybe what I want to do is write a script that generates, say, 10 icospheres at random locations near the origin. Okay, so the way we can do that is up here in the Blender interface is your scripting interface that lets you write scripts. So I'm going to make a new script by clicking this new button. And by default, the name of the script is going to be called text, but let me just call it, add ico.py, say. And okay, so now I can start typing in the script. So, anyone who's used to a really nice, integrated development environment for Python, say like Eclipse. This is not Eclipse, and it's not a very good text editor. It's kind of crummy in some ways, but it works and it lets you write scripts easily. If you were doing this in a more production environment, we might ask Adam, how to set this up so that we could interface this with Eclipse. But just to get started quick and dirty, this is how we can do it. So the first thing we have to do in a new Python script that we're making is we have to say import BPY, that stands for Blender Python, because our script is going to be using Blender Python. And let's say I'm going to use random numbers. So I have to say import random, and I think that's the right. You can test things down here. Yeah. So I'm going to say import random. And I think that's all I need to get started with this. So if I want a loop, say 10 times, I can make a for loop for I in range 10, and I can say, you know, x equal random dot random. Let's see. So I think if I say random, random, I have trouble typing today. I think random dot random gives a random number between 0 and 1, I think. So if I do a here, I really can use the help. So random dot random says method of random instance gives x in the interval 0 to 1. And I think this means it's in the open interval, half open interval 0 to 1, meaning it can be equal to 0, but it's always less than 1. Not, it's never exactly equal to 1. I think that's what this notation means. So, so I can do this. And so what if I want my Eichel spheres to be somewhere within within 5 units of the origin? So first of all, I can say random minus a half. So if I say random.random minus a half, that gives me a number between 0 and 1. And then I subtract a half, so that gives me now a number between minus a half and plus a half. And now if I multiply that by 10, my value of x will be between minus 5 and plus 5. And I can do the same thing. Ooh. For y and ooh. Y and z. Okay. And now I can say I can add my Eichel sphere again. So I can be lazy and I can go into mesh Eichel sphere and say copy Python command and then go up here and then paste it. And we saw a moment ago that we can say location equal, you know, X, Y, Z like this. And it looks like it's not inside parentheses, which is kind of funny. But that's what they say. So, I'm not sure I believe this, but we're gonna take it just the way they said it. Normally, I would want to maybe put parentheses around that, like that, right? I'm not gonna do that. Okay, so. Location equal XYZ. And I think that's all I need. But you'll notice that I didn't do anything at the beginning here to set up the initial conditions of my script. So I'm kind of breaking one of my rules, but let's just try this. And then we'll try to break it on purpose. And then I'll show you what you need to do to make it work reliably. Okay. So this script, I think, doesn't have any typos in it. It might work as written. So, but let's see, to start, to see what it does though, I'm gonna delete our existing things, and I'll put the cursor in some random location, not at the origin. And what we should see, I think maybe these are in, this grid is in units of one Blender unit. So we should see our icospheres appear somewhere in the cube between -5 to +5. So let's see if this is the origin right here. 1, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. We should see all our icospheres appear somewhere in here. And the size, I think, of the icospheres, the default size is a radius of 1 unit. So that means the diameter is 2 units. So we might see the icospheres kind of overlap with each other a little bit once in a while. And so once you've written a script, you can run the script by clicking on Run Script. And that says, okay, it says positional argument follows keyword argument, line 9. Okay, and see, add location equal XYZ. And I think it's not happy. I think there's a typo in their documentation where you have to put parentheses around that. Let's try it again. Aha. So they do have a typo in their documentation. And we should see 10 icospheres here. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. There's one right there. And if I run it again, we'll get another 10. And another 10, and another 10, and another 10. And I can keep clicking this button, and I'll get 10 more each time. Because the script doesn't say to delete anything, it just says to make 10 more each time. And the random number generator, if you don't give a seed to the random number generator, then by default, it seeds itself to something from the system clock or something like that. Okay. Now I can select everything and delete everything and run it again. So let's if we wanted this to be consistent, I think there's a command called seed. Seed equal method of random instance initialize internal state from hashable object none or no argument seeds from current time. Okay, if A is an int, all bits are used. Okay, and what's the version? All the bits are used if A is a string, bytes or byte array. For version 1, the algorithm generates a narrower range of seeds. Okay, so by default, they're saying version 2 of the seed algorithm is what we're gonna get. So at the beginning of our script, before we do anything, I could say random.seed, I have to say, it's a named argument, so I have to say A equal 0, say. So we're gonna seed the random number generator with the integer with value 0. So every time we run this script, we'll have the same seed. And so we should get the same sequence of random numbers every time I run it. So if we pay attention to how many objects are in the scene up here, you'll see right now it says 0 objects. If I run my script, I now have 10 objects, and here they are. And if I run the script again, I now have 20 objects, but I didn't see anything happen because the second 10 objects fell exactly on top of the first 10 objects because I'm using the same seed each time. Okay, so this is all behaving as I expect it to behave. But I like the version of the script where it's random every time, like that. Okay, so we've seen how to, you know, find operators and commands from the menus, try them out in the Python console, and make a script that automates things. And to run the script, I have to click on the Run Script button here. And if I want to change how the script behaves, I have to edit the script and some parameter in the script or something and change its behavior. So I could use seed 0 and run it once, and they come out there. And now I could run it again, but I could change the seed to seed 1. Oops. And run it again, and now I get another one, right? In a different place because it's a different seed. I could change parameters, but to change them, I have to do it through, through editing the script by hand, right? So if I want to do something fancier, like have my script be, have a user interface where in the Blender user interface somewhere, you know, I have some button in here. Instead of hitting Run Script here, I could, find some widget for my tool. Here I'm just showing you the user interface to an add-on called Gamer that has these parameters in it, and whenever I click on these buttons here, it actually performs an operation. And just like other things in the menus in Blender, if I want to see how to use that menu item, I can point at the menu item and hover over it, and it shows me things. Even the add-ons that you make in Blender can behave the same way. So for example, here in the Gamer add-on, if I hover over this this button here that says smooth tries, it says smooth selected vertices of the mesh, and then it gives me the Python, bpyops gamer.smooth. Okay, so next time that we get together, well, we're gonna do a few more things here today, but the next time we get together, we'll start learning how to turn a simple Python script like this into something that has a user interface that appears in the Blender menu and lets you, operate, change parameters for it and operate it by clicking on buttons that you make in the user interface. So we'll cover that next time. But before we do, I'm going to show you say how to add metadata to objects that you make, because when you have a script that's operating on things, you want to do more. Your automation is going to do more than just perform some set of tasks in a prescribed way. Now that's pretty common, but you're also going to want to be able to associate data, some analysis data or some other attributes with the objects that you make or parts of the objects that you make. And as soon as you have that capability to create things and add metadata to things, you know, custom metadata that means something to you and your analysis, all of a sudden you're in the world of you know, really having a useful, you know, something really useful that you can do. Okay. So how do we add metadata? So we have like 7 minutes left here. I'm going to run my script, and I have my 10 icospheres. So I should be able to say scene.objects.keys. And there's our 10 icospheres, number labeled icosphere with nothing, dot, you know, 001, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, right? So there are 10 icospheres. What if I wanted to create the icospheres and for each one maybe associate with it some data? I'm trying to remember how to do that. It's funny that I can't remember exactly how to do that from scratch, because at this stage of our scripting development and interface development, we usually take an old script or a previous existing script and just make a copy of it and start modifying it at a really high level, and all the low level stuff is already in the script and you don't have to touch it anymore. And so you kind of forget all that low level stuff. But I'm gonna show you, let's see if we can find a really useful web page that isn't really connected exactly to the Blender documentation, and even though it should be. So I'm going to go back here and I'm going to do a search term for something that I hope still exists. Blender code snippets. I think there's a web page, code snippets. Introduction to Python scripting in Blender 2.5. So this is old, but it still is correct for the current version of Blender, I think. And it has some really, if it's the web page I'm thinking of, this is going to have some really useful stuff. Okay, this is not the web page I thought it was going to be. This is it. It's this cookbook. Okay. Except it says Japanese. But it looks like it's still in English. And somewhere in here. Ah, yeah. See, they translated it into Japanese, even though the text of it is in English out here. There's an English version of this somewhere. Blender. Let's see if this finds. Ah, here's the English one. No, that still says Japanese. Okay, this says Wikibooks. But is it here or is it not here? It's not finding what I'm looking for. Well, this Japanese one is calling to me again. So I can't read this Japanese, but I know somewhere in here, because this looks familiar. All right. No, this is not what I was looking for. All right. Well, let's see. We're going to look for something else here. We're almost out of time, but I just wanted to show you this one thing quick as a something to think about for next time. Blender ID properties. ID property. Here we go. Okay, so it looks like this is somewhere. Let's see, how do we, so that's just showing me the low level. That was just a low level information about it. Aha, here we go. Okay, but this is the high level. This is the high level. There's a super low level. And it's important to learn about the low level because the high level is built upon the low level. Let's see. So that's not it either. We'll need that later, but we don't need it right now. Save objects in ID properties. That's not it either. Okay. Yeah, I think that's all I have to do, I think. It's not as hard as you think. Okay. So if I want to add, say, some custom metadata to, let's say, the first icosphere, just called icosphere, I can say, first of all, I can get a handle to it so it's easier to work with. I can say obj equal scene goes like this. And then I can say obj, and then I can make up something. It kind of acts like a dictionary. And so I can say my metadata, something like that. And what I'm allowed to put here is, and I think a float, an integer, an array of floats or integers, or a string, or another dictionary. So let's, if I put an, I can put an empty dictionary there. And now that I've done that, if I just refer to it, you can see that there's something here called name my metadata, but it doesn't say it's a dictionary. It says it's a BPY ID property. And and its name is my metadata. But I can overwrite it and I can say 5. And now when I refer to it, it just says 5. And then to show you something interesting about this, is if I save my project, and this will be the last thing I'll show you before we go. If I save my project somewhere, let's go all the way up here and we'll make a new directory I'll just call this tutorial. Make a subdirectory for that. I'll just call this tutorial 2020. Don't say 2020. 2020 10 07. And I'll now save that. And then I will quit Blender and restart Blender and open the tutorial. It comes back to where we were. But I have to reset my variables here. So this would be bpy.context.scene.up equal. Then obj equal scene objects icosphere. And then I can say obj, I can say dir obj. And somewhere in dir obj, in alphabetical order, should be something called, where is it? Right, it's not gonna appear. It's not gonna appear there. I think it doesn't appear there. But I can say obj metadata, and there's the 5 that I had put there. So just by adding new metadata to objects, and the type and the metadata is called is stored in a form called an ID property. Just by extending the ID property of an object, it's then in a form that Blender knows how to save when you save your project, and you can retrieve the data later. But because I have to know what I put there. And I think I can say obj.keys, maybe, and it will show me, aha, there it is. If I say obj.keys, it shows me the metadata that's associated with it. So there's one called my metadata and another one called mcell, because I'm doing this in the context of a Blender that has the Cell Blender add-on included in it. And the Cell Blender add-on adds an mcell metadata thing so that you can turn your scene into an mcell model that you can run with mcell. Okay, so I think that's it for today. Maybe before I go, I'll open it up for questions from people. So I'll stop sharing the screen and see if anybody has any questions. And if not, I'll stop recording and we can continue next time. I'm going to hit stop recording now.